This is Mass Timber Today, and I'm Craig Applegath. This podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of sustainable mass timber construction with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors. In this episode, I talk with Robert Schmitz, an architect and partner at White Architecture, based in Stockholm, Sweden. Robert is an award-winning, modern-day pioneer of mass timber design and construction, and most recently has been garnering international accolades for his role as the lead architect for the Serra Cultural Center, the world's largest carbon-negative timber building. Beyond his architectural endeavors, Robert is an international keynote speaker and contributes his expertise to various international architectural juries. In this episode, Robert and I discuss the embodied carbon advantages of mass timber, how the growing mass timber industry can contribute to reducing environmental impacts across different sectors, the crucial role architects designing mass timber buildings play in driving the adoption of mass timber, and his insights as a Scandinavian architect on the specific challenges and opportunities associated with building using this very sustainable material. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Robert, welcome to the Mass Timber Today podcast.
Thank you. Nice to having me here.
You're well known internationally for your mass timber design at White Architecture, where you're a partner. So why don't you tell our listeners how you became interested in mass timber and how it became such an integral part of your career?
Growing up in Sweden, over half of the population, 70% of the population, has access to these small cottages in the rural places in Sweden. We call it weekend homes or summer houses. And they are by 99% made from timber. So we have this collective memory from our childhood in Sweden, growing up or spending our summers in timber cottages like this. So that I think we can connect to timber and timber buildings. And I think that's maybe it's the same in Canada. But that's a very traditional material that we have used for a very long time, and is very common to still today at stick frame production in smaller housing projects, for example. And the fact that my first design was made from timber was a small temporary building inside the courtyard of the Royal Palace here in Stockholm, where I'm based.
What type of building was it? What was the program?
It was a mail system building that we used when we did the renovation of the palace. So that moved out to the inner courtyard. And we needed to do it very fast. And we also knew that we were going to disassemble it in the end. So we chose timber, basically. And then we can use the timber for something else. In that sense, was quite sustainable. And me working at White Architecture, so I've been working here for 16 years. And we was always in the search for a sustainable approach in architecture and finding the most sustainable material also, and how we can affect our the built environment with a minimal sustainable footprint. And timber being the only renewable building material we have today, that's a really good good way to advocate, I think. As you said, it's been following my career, and we have try to push this material into almost every project that we are into, but sometimes with success, sometimes not.
Talk a bit more about what do you find most compelling about mass timber? What is it that keeps holding your attention? You've been doing it for 20 years now. What really gets you revved up about mass timber?
I think it's an honest material. It's a natural material, a living material, and being exposed, you can see it aging, and it sometimes it's cracks, and it's the organic expression that it is, or it's organic material. And I think with this new modern timber technology, making CLT boards or LVL or glulam, we can use this for creating larger structure and more complex buildings without having to sacrifice the architecture. We can also embed the architecture and integrate it into the design. And I think that's a compelling way that we use this as a tool for architecture.
And what kind of projects are you working on right now using mass timber?
So besides traveling around and talk about Serra Culture Center, which has been finished now for over a year, it opened last September.
which is a very cool project.
So it's it's a culture center and a hotel in the northern parts of Sweden. I am doing a number of other projects. One in Riga in Latvia. It's a quite large office building or a block, basically, which is in all in mass timber. Here we are pushing the Latvian laws for how high you can build in timber, for example, and that's an outcome from the Sarah Culture Center. And also I'm doing a very early stage 70-story timber tower in the center of Stockholm. But as a company, we're doing a range of different projects, everything from small visitor centers to hospital at the moment.
What about key innovations? What are the most compelling mass timber innovations you're seeing in your work? Innovations that will really move the design and engineering of mass timber forward?
I mean, it's a traditional material and it's been used for as long as humanity has been
around.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the innovation is how to utilize the material in manufacturing and the speed, safety when producing the material, modularity, offsite production, joints, and how to assemble it. So we have so many different solutions for this material. And it's really, in that sense, a really resilient material to work. You can use it in different ways to best fit your local production chain.
Yes, and talking about assembly, but also disassembly. I think that's both are really key opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's currently a lot of discussion about what makes mass timber a more environmentally responsible and sustainable building material. How would you describe its importance?
I would say it's the fact that the building industry's impact on the environment is about, I don't know, 20, 21%.
Yeah, between 20 and 35%, depending on how you calculate
it. Yeah, so it's, I think in Sweden we say 21%, but of course, if you consider all the resources that we are taking from other countries, of course, it's much more.
Yeah.
And timber is also the material that actually removes carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, being produced as a wood, for example, or when the trees are growing, that binds carbon dioxide. So in that sense, I think it has a real importance for the future of the built environment.
Yes, it certainly its ability to lock up carbon and reduce embodied carbon is key. So maybe you could talk more about how mass timber and forests are a key part of the solution to carbon emissions and climate change.
Yeah. So the first thing is that you have to have sustainable forestry.
Right.
And the timber has to be certified so that we know that we can follow it. And that for every tree that you cut down, you at least replant one or two or three new species so that they allow it to grow and capture more carbon dioxide from the air. So this becomes more of a carbon sink when we have the embodied carbon in our buildings instead. And I think we need to understand that chain of production or manufacturing in order to say that we are sustainable. And we also need to nurse our forests, of course. And in Sweden, for example, we have a long tradition of sustainable forestry, so that we have managed forests, so you don't break new grounds taking trees that shouldn't have been taken. We have to address that issue, yeah.
And related to that, let's talk more about biogenic carbon, locking up carbon in mass timber. Biogenic carbon seems to be a hot topic right now, and in some circles, highly contested. What's your take on its place in the argument for mass timber?
I mean, it's part of the photosynthesis. Then I think it's a natural, that's the concept of trees, basically, that it captures carbon dioxide. But I mean, we need to be resilient. We need to find many ways to lower our environmental impact on the globe. So we can do that in lots of materials. And using timber is one of them, and it's really good that we do that. And it also accelerates all the other industries as well to think about this. So that now the concrete industry, for example, also finds new ways to lower their impact. Or the steel industry, for example, using green steel.
Right, like new steel, zero carbon steel.
Yeah. Exactly. I think everyone has to participate and do this together.
Yeah, and the challenge on the biogenic carbon issue is that some argue that because buildings aren't there forever, that the wood will return to the soil and produce carbon dioxide and methane, and therefore you really can't count the carbon. But in terms of the carbon emergency or climate emergency we have right now, I'm certainly supportive of counting biogenic carbon.
Yes. I
mean, you're locking it up right now for the next 25 years when we have the yeah. biggest impact.
And hopefully it will be locked up much longer than that.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, at the very minimum for 25 years.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's a good thing. I'm not against it. I'm pro it.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. Shifting gears a bit, there's lots of conversation about the cost effectiveness of using mass timber, at least here in North America. What needs to be done to make it more cost effective as an option?
I think, first of all, we need to understand the entire value chain. In Sweden, there has been a knowledge gap. For there is a lot of stakeholders working with buildings, the client, the architects.
And you guys have been doing it for 30 years too.
Yes, yes.
I mean, think of how hard it's going to be in North America.
I think you, right now we're ahead of you.
Yeah.
And here we're doing a lot of timber building and CLT. And we're quite a strong industry. But I mean, we need to promote that and we need to guide everyone so that everyone raise their knowledge in timber. So that they understand the design process and also the building process so that you can see the benefits also. You can't do a concrete building and then just apply timber on it. It doesn't work that way. You have to think of it as a timber building from the very beginning and work with the expertise of timber and manufacturers so that we understand, okay, how can we best utilize the boards?
Yes.
And then you also have to, when you do estimation or calculations, we have to think of it a more holistic approach so to see that, for example, in the Sarah Culture Center, we saved about a year of construction time in that project from 3 to 2 years, I think it was. And that gave us back earnings so that we could have rent more earlier in the building.
So in the end, the total value was actually equal or better than if you'd done it out of steel or concrete.
Exactly.
And also in that case, it had a community building effect that another kind of building wouldn't have.
Exactly. That's one part, because everything is offsite production. So the boards or the material, the building stones are made in safe, controlled environment for the people following protocols and safety regulations. Since the lightness of the material, it's 5 times lighter than concrete, for example. So that reduces lots of transportation. And we can do larger elements. We use fewer lifts on site with cranes, fewer personnel or staff on site as well. Cleaner, much more silent construction site, so we can work longer hours. If that's the not that I'm saying that you should, but you could. And especially, I think you can really do it in cities, for example. It's had an advantage of being much more silent, so it doesn't disturb these surrounding neighbors.
Yeah, and in cities too, you have the opportunity, because it's so light, to build on existing buildings, because the foundations can probably take it. So that's another opportunity, so you don't have to demolish buildings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Robert, what are the most inspiring mass timber projects you're seeing out there? And what is about them that inspires you?
Yeah, so it's right now, I think I'm turning towards the East and Japan. And I think for me, a revelation was to see the Shigurubane Tamigi office building in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. It's a demonstration of craftsmanship, but using glulam and CLT. And also it's the exposure of the timber and that being used like in a traditional way of how to assemble, but in a new way. So I think that was an eye opener for me. But also the Kengo Kuma has a lot of very interesting projects. The Bridge Museum, for example. Mm-hmm. Also how you can, with traditional wooden techniques, using the modern timber industry, so that like joining them together, it's really beautiful. So it's like sensual buildings you can use that in timber. And I think that's something that you also want to express the timber in the architecture.
What kinds of building types could and should be mass timber, but currently aren't? And how do we get there?
How do we get there? I think we basically, you could do anything in timber, I would say. And Stora Enso is saying that they can do airplanes in timber as well. So it's,
well, that will be interesting to see a prototype of that. I heard that too.
Yeah. I'm not going to. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the first their airplanes were actually wooden cloth, right? The biplanes.
Exactly. So it's, I don't see any limitations at all, actually. But I think it's more and more important that we think of it as a holistic approach, and we take it under consideration with doing new cities or communities, that they can be entirely of timber, for example. That would be interesting to see.
So we can do anything. What do you see as being the most important challenges for the mass timber industry or sector, and how we address them?
At the moment, I think it's the lack of knowledge within the industry and within the people that is making the laws. So that they understand that timber is not that dangerous as they think, we need to raise the awareness of how timber works and all the benefits with it, and that goes from the people that are doing the regulations to builders and to people that are doing the MIP or the installations, and because you have to address this in a slightly different way if you think of it. That was the most fun of realizing the Sarah Culture Center, was that the entire crew or everyone that was involved in this project had a mindset. Once we said that, okay, let's do this in timber, then we have to find a new way of making it. So nobody know really how, because it would, you had never done a 20-story building before in timber. So nobody could say that, I know how this is done. So there was a strong participation from all the stakeholders through the entire design process, basically. And I was involved as much as the project leader. And together we found solutions. And I think that's the key for timber and also how to save the world environmentally, that we're doing this together. It's more about collaboration and thinking together instead of just thinking in silos.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And speaking of the knowledge gap, I think that also has real impact on costs, because sometimes the costs appear higher when trades are bidding it because they just aren't certain about how it will turn out. So they put on an extra number of dollars just to cover themselves. Whereas once they're in the flow of doing things, they'll have a much better sense of the real cost.
Yes, exactly. The insecurity drives the risk money, of course.
What about the mass timber supply chain, forest to building? What are the key friction points and how could they be addressed?
I think in Sweden, we have a quite developed supply chain. The sawmill is, I mean, there's different companies that have sawmills. Then they have done also the CLT so that they know what they're doing. But then the friction point is how to get it out to the market and to sell it, not just as a piece of timber or a CLT, but you also have to have the knowledge to assemble it and to make it into to a building. And I think that's the biggest hurdle today, basically. There's a lot of builders that want to own the entire production chain.
Right.
Because that's how they make their money.
Vertically integrated and it's smoother and they make money and are more competitive, yes.
And that goes back to the previous question about collaboration, that you have to understand the entire production chain, but maybe you don't have to own it, or you do. But still, it has to fit into these different hurdles or tackles.
Yeah.
And also about public bidding, for example.
That's a problem. When I'm talking to clients, I'm advising them to have a procurement process like design build or CM, where the manufacturer, the fabricator, is involved right at the beginning, so that there's a conversation back and forth, so that they know that what they're designing can be done most effectively by the fabricator, as opposed to having the drawings go out and it turns out that the grid or the materiality or whatever it is not going to be as effective. So yes, I agree.
So it's, for us, it was when we did the competition for Sarah Culture Center, it was a public, an open competition. We collaborated with an structural engineer with knowledge of timber so that our ideas could put real with timber, not just saying we could do it in timber or concrete. So it relied on the concept of timber, basically. And that's hard if then you go and you do tender drawings and then someone says that, no, but we let's do it in concrete instead. And that would be another project, basically.
Yeah, totally different. Yeah.
So I think that's the hardest.
You have to commit at the outset. Yeah, you have to make a decision at the outset.
Yeah.
On the flip side of the challenges coin, from your vantage point, what do you see being the most important opportunities for mass timber design and construction in the future? And how do we take advantage of them?
I think one of them is timber on top, as you mentioned as well. You can add an extra floor or so many extra floors that you can on existing buildings in the existing environment, I think. And also the speed of erecting the timber structures, I think that's a really good benefit. And as I've said before, the lightness of the material but also the expression of the buildings, that we can have a new way of seeing architecture.
Yeah, I think that's a real opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the fun part of being an architect these days.
Yeah,
is that we are on the verge to have a new dogma for architecture in timber, and I hope it will be. And once we get through this, that we have to cover all the timber in the construction, for example, as you have problems in Canada and in the States. But when you can expose it, you can also use the construction more. And I think we can have a revival of lots of different ideas of how to create architecture.
Yeah, I so agree. And I know the difference between a mass timber building and a concrete or steel when clients and occupants walk in is night and day. Like you just breathe in and look around and people feel good.
Yeah.
It's tremendous. And to wrap up our conversation, I'd like you to tell listeners, what are the three articles or websites or books related to mass timber you'd recommend to them and why?
Okay. First of all, I think we need to read a lot of architects' books in general to understand how architecture affects the built environment. But I would say... Timber in Architecture by Shigeru Ban, because it's a story about how he approaches architecture, and then timber comes quite naturally into his theories, basically. And the second one is Solid Wood by Joseph Mayo, more of a statues, all the different types of timber architecture to that date when the book was made, basically.
Yep.
And then the most recent one is from the German magazine Detail. It's they have this special edition manual of multi-story timber constructions.
That's a good one. Yeah.
It's just been released, and it's a bestseller already. And I have contributed to it with a small chapter. So it's
excellent.
And I think that's also can really dive into all the detailing and how, what you can do with timber. So I think it's a really nice edition.
Those are three good lists. And what we'll do on the website is we'll put links to those so people can get access to them. And finally, what advice would you offer to our listeners about how they could make a shift to using mass timber, if they're not, on their building projects?
They should get together with good engineers, learn about the material so that they understand what journey they're going into. And it also makes it easier to convince the client in the end to say, we're going to do this in timber, I would say.
Yeah, that's very good advice. And finally, where can people find out more about what you're doing? Can you provide a website URL for our listeners to find out more about what you and White Architecture are doing?
Yes. Our webpage is www.whitearchitecture.com.
Okay.
I think you
and
could.
We'll spell that out in the show notes.
Yes. And there we have a chapter for timber buildings and all our timber projects that we have done recently and so far.
Excellent. Robert, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you.
The Mass Timber Today podcast is produced by the Mass Timber Institute at the University of Toronto's John H. Daniels Faculty of Architecture, Landscape and Design. Each podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of mass timber with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors to shed light on the future of sustainable mass timber construction. You can find show notes, including references mentioned in this podcast, on our website at masstimberinstitute.ca, where you can also view our current projects and subscribe to our MTI newsletter. This episode was edited by Derek Welsman and produced by Sean Shuklaw at the Mass Timber Institute. We'd also like to give a special thanks to Dialogue for their generous sponsorship of this podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us at the Apple iTunes ranking site. You can also reach us on our website, and we'd love to hear from you with any suggestions for future interviews.